Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Hey, and welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Nadolski, and I got my co-host, Dr. Carl Nadolski Jr.
Hey.
And today we have an awesome pediatrician with us, an obesity certified pediatrician, Dr. Zina El Rufai, with us. She listened to our PEDS initial reaction to the PEDS guidelines and has her own unique, I won't say spin on it, just
thoughts,
viewpoint on it. Thoughts.
Yeah, and experience.
And experience. So again, if you're following the story, lots of headlines. We talked about this last time, but just I keep seeing more and more headlines. There's some people saying, I even saw one today that the viewpoint was that, hey, these guidelines are awful because like we shouldn't even worry if kids have obesity because obesity is not even a problem.
No. Yeah. We're going to cause everyone to have eating disorders by talking about it. That's what I've been seeing most recently. It's a lot of like all the eating disorder dietitians are all raging and so upset.
That's an interesting point.
They have a valid point, but however, not talking about it is not okay either.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting. So I was just this past Monday and Tuesday, I was actually involved with the Obesity Society's annual conference planning committee meeting. So I had to go do that. And it was like this fairly intensive like brainstorming session. And this, of course, got brought up because we wanted to make sure we had a session on the pediatric guidelines. And so, you know, there were some discussions on that. And the psychologists involved with this planning committee really kind of debunked that concern. They said that there's not really, there are no data to suggest that treating, you know, acknowledging and treating the disease of obesity in kids will lead to any eating disorders. Obviously, you might be able to tell us there might be some nuance to that and how to avoid making that happen, because we certainly don't want that to be a problem either.
Correct. There's a right and a wrong way to talk about it for sure. And, you know, maybe physicians in the past may not have talked about it in the right way, or parents may not have approached it in the right way with their children. But even in the guidelines, it stated that as well, that talking about it, discussing it does not lead to an increased risk or increased incidence of eating disorders.
Well, that's good to know. Tell us, I want to know how, like, what's your general approach to, you know, some kid comes in with obesity, and what is your approach? And whether it's a physical exam that they don't even, that you're screening for it, or someone coming to you specifically, like, for help. They know they have it, they need help with it, or parents obviously bringing them in.
I think you forgot to highlight the fact that she is certified by the American Board of Obesity Medicine. Did you do that? And for this
didn't
part,
I say she's
I don't know if that was in the first recording.
We talked about it before it started recording.
Oh my gosh.
And she's a certified lifestyle coach.
Okay. Yep. Dr. El Rufai. There were some recording issues, and people that listen to this podcast are probably like, these idiots don't know what they're doing with their podcast.
Like, doctors should just not be on, just stay where you're, stay in your lane is probably what they're thinking.
Yeah, they're just like, okay, so Dr. El Rufai, she is a board certified pediatrician, board certified in obesity, specializes in both, and has much better experience than both. My brother sure as hell has no experience. I'm just kidding.
You have to be 18 and older to see me.
Yeah. I did family medicine, but you know, it's interesting, just a complete tangent. When my wife's a pediatrician and then specialized in neonatology, and I've hung out with a bunch of pediatricians, and I got my, you know, with family medicine, you have to do pediatrics and internal medicine. And then unfortunately, OBGYN for myself, I dislike that. But the amount of training that a pediatrician gets is 3 years specifically. It's so much more rigorous than what you'd get from in family medicine. So I appreciate your specialty very much so, because you do get much more experience in this than say family medicine.
And I really appreciate it, because I get zero.
Yeah. And it's different, right? What's the adage that children are not small adults,
right?
Like it's a totally different physiology, different psyche, you know, psychology, even like within pediatrics, like a preschooler versus an elementary school versus a teenager are going to be treated and approached totally differently.
Yeah. You know, I know there were too many tangents, but I'll tell you that once in a while we are in my, where I came from in my system, I was forced to see some, what I would call pediatric patients. And unfortunately I just didn't agree with it, but it was when, you know, adolescent females got pregnant and let's say they have type 1 diabetes or something. And the pediatric endocrinologists, and I probably shouldn't, I don't want to throw them under the bus, but suddenly they said, oh, no, you're an adult because you got pregnant. And so I was kind of going, I don't know that I'm licensed to do this. I get it. You know, we can do that. I mean, that's not that, it's not, I mean, we all understand how to do that, especially as endocrinologists, but, you know, but there's a little bit of a discomfort there. I'm like, oh, okay. But
that makes you an adult all of a sudden.
Oh, interesting. Real thing. Yeah. So anyways, that's
all right. So Dr. El-Rufai is a pediatric obesity specialist.
Yeah.
So we wanted her on here to give her experience because it's better than ours. And we wanted her viewpoint. And go ahead.
And I'm from viewing point from a general pediatrician who does obesity medicine. So I don't work in an obesity medicine, like multidisciplinary clinic. Mm. That's going to be even a different experience altogether. But I'm just like boots on the ground. This is what I deal with. This is what I got. And the guidelines seemed like they were talking more to the general pediatrician than to say the specialists. Mm-hmm. So I was super excited to like get guidelines, right? Like, okay, let's see what's the latest. And I was a bit surprised. I think I just, what came out wasn't what I was expecting.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Yeah. So I guess like as a general peds person, like, because there's so much talk about medications and medication management and whatnot, I thought there was going to be some like algorithms and things like that for me to follow, like start here, then go here, then do this. The bulk of the guidelines was all about talking about the, you know, etiology of obesity, the social determinants of health, and then lifestyle therapy being the foundational treatment, which we know, we all get that. But then there was no like clinical practical applications suggested of how to get that done on the, you know, with families, because as you guys may know, if your parents, like your pediatrician's office generally is pretty busy. Your appointments are generally 15 to 20 minutes, maybe for a well visit. And we got to cover a lot in that short time period and talk about vaccines and all of that kind of stuff. And so, you know, like talking about obesity or health, even broaching the subject is, it takes some time, but then even to really dive into it takes even more time. And so they're kind of just like put all of the responsibility on us, and that it being the patient's medical home, which is usually their pediatrician's office. And that probably is the best approach, but practically speaking, I don't know that that's really getting done effectively or efficiently.
That's pretty interesting, because, you know, our initial little response to all the manufactured outrage out there on the guidelines, because, you know, what was in the media, of course, was, hey, we need to really get on top of pediatric obesity, treat with intensity. And because I don't know what the deal was with the media, but they kind of glossed over the lifestyle, because maybe because they just are like, well, everyone knows that or something. So they really kind of focused on, hey, we need to start thinking about medications up front. So everyone had this outrage, allegedly, about going right to medications or surgery. And so our just initial response was, we looked at the guidelines. They're very heavy. I mean, if you just kind of glance at them, you wouldn't even know they talk about medications, because it's so heavy in the lifestyle stuff. But it's interesting from a pragmatic or realistic perspective that you're saying, as a pediatrician who specializes in obesity and trying to be on the front lines, you're saying, wow, they were so heavy in lifestyle that they didn't really give you a good way to embrace it and take action on it, kind of in a simplified,
kind of
realistic way.
Huh. Like, what's step two? Or like, you know, it talked about in the studies, like the most effective lifestyle, you know, programs were 26 hours face to face, you know, family centered, et cetera, et cetera. Well, 26 hours is a lot to ask.
Yeah.
26 hours out of a general pediatrician's day, you know, or not day, but like, you know, in 3 to 12 months, that's a lot of intensity. And I don't know that realistically the general pediatricians are really able, or have not yet, you know, found a way to make that happen.
Yeah. It's the same with us, you know, the same type of intensive lifestyle behavioral plans that have been, you know, the data behind them from the diabetes prevention program and look ahead and all these different things. that doesn't happen in reality, right? So right. patients don't want to do that either. So right. that's interesting.
And it also said to refer to like specialty clinics. And, you know, like in my area, there's not a lot of options around, and I'm in a metro, you know, like big city, but, you know, A, it's limited resources, and B, a lot of patients mm-hmm. won't even go. Like I would try to refer them. They don't go. So that's like another barrier. So it's like,
so
what do I do?
Ann Arbor probably has what is probably, is that the closest?
Ann Arbor, as far as I know, is the closest multidisciplinary clinic. I think some of the local hospital systems have been talking about it. There is a weight management program that we're supposed, you know, I've referred to, but to my personal experience, just like as a mom who took her child there, it was very basic. I didn't see a dietitian. It wasn't even offered to me to see a dietitian. It was just what me as a pediatrician should be telling my patients, right?
Yeah.
Here, but I thought I was going to get that next step because, like, I already know the basics, right? Like, mm-hmm. and I went as a parent, not as a pediatrician. Like, I have a different last name than my children, so I just went in, just kind of like treat me like a regular person. And I met with the doctor. She was wonderful, and she was so kind, and spent 45 minutes with us, and sent me home with like a couple worksheets, and was like, "Come back in 6 months," is what she told me. And I was like, "Really? That's it? Is this what I'm referring my patients to? Because that I can do myself." In the office. And that's kind of what started me on this path. It was really disappointing for me.
Do you know from your perspective in the pediatric world, because I can give you a perspective from the adult endocrine obesity world, is it because of reimbursement, resources, all that stuff that we're running into with the pediatrics? Because that's very disappointing and we're going to have to find a different way.
Yeah. That's probably part of it, because a lot of times in pediatrics, even if a child has obesity, they don't always have those secondary comorbidities. They haven't maybe developed diabetes yet or hypertension or liver disease. And it's like, I want to prevent that from happening. And so when you talk to the insurance companies and say, like, I want to bill for, you know, the time that I spent with a patient, it may not always be fully reimbursed if there isn't some kind of medical complication ongoing to make the medical diagnosis, you know, more severe, so to speak. Now that we have some ability to bill on time, that's helped some, so that we can just kind of say this is the number of minutes I've spent. But it's kind of hit or miss, especially most of my patient population is private insurance. And so you have a whole different set of things. It might go via high deductible. So then the patient's paying out of pocket for all these things and they don't want to keep coming because, you know, it's like too much in the long run for them. Or the insurance just is like, nope, you've reached your max amount allowable for that code.
Yeah. You know? And the dietitian, medical nutrition therapy, all that stuff, that's probably, you know, falls in line with that in a bigger issue. Cause I know, you know, I hate to say it, but at least with my patients, there's a much higher likelihood of complications from obesity. So those tend to get a little bit better coverage. I am fortunate that some of our insurances here where I live, will cover medical nutrition therapy for obesity. Just straight up, regardless of complications. But yeah, that I can see that being a much bigger barrier for the pediatric population to have some of that, you know, lifestyle counseling with a, you know, a dietitian mm-hmm. or anybody else for that matter, where the reimbursement really gets to be a problem, despite knowing that
even finding a pediatric dietitian, you know, like even for just like picky eating, you know, like we have a couple names of some, but most of the dietitians in the pediatric world tend to be tied to the specialty clinics. Like it's a diabetic, you know, dietitian or an endocrine clinic, or it's a GI dietitian in the GI clinic. And you have to go to those clinics to get access to those dietitians. And so they don't have an endocrine problem or a GI problem related to their obesity. You know, it's really difficult to try to get them to see those dietitians.
Yeah. Okay. So what's your practical, like what would you do when patients come in? Like let's hear your approach. I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. So what I'm trying to do now this year is kind of create a clinic within the clinic. Mm-hmm. So like have my colleagues, if they identify someone who has obesity and it's, you know, kind of a discussion is made where they do some lab work potentially depending on the degree of obesity or any risk factors. And then refer them to me, and I'm going to set aside certain hours of the week, maybe a Saturday, you know, and meet with them, and then have those appointments be like an obesity medicine clinic or weight management clinic within our general pediatric clinic as a stepping stone, because I got to try something.
So yeah, what are your appointments like?
it for this clinic.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. right now I'm trying to utilize some telehealth since we have, you know, telehealth options now to help increase flexibility. I meet for 45 minutes to an hour with the families, either online if they haven't been seen. If they have been seen in person recently, let's say they had a well visit and they had labs, I might offer them to do it online. And then I just kind of go through their family history, the social history, et cetera. Just really the first visit is just really getting to know the patient and the family, establishing goals. And then I try to use some of my coaching techniques as well to kind of, and that, you know, coaching, I like it because it's a bit like motivational interviewing is involved in it and behavioral therapy principles can be involved in it so that we can establish change that is between all of us as a team. So if it's a teenager, I'm like, let's talk. Like I talk to the teenager, but have the family's support. So let's say like, what do we think we could work on first? And kind of setting up those first goals together.
So you're not slinging drugs right when somebody comes into
the door. No, absolutely not. But I've had some teens who are like, I want to lose weight. I want Wegovy. My dad's on Wegovy and he's losing weight. I want it right now. And I'm like, no, sorry, we can't do that.
Yeah. I'd be interested to know what you see as far as, you know, obesity related complications, you know, the percentage. Obviously, if you have obesity as in your youth, you have a much higher risk of these obesity related complications as you get into young adulthood. So that's when I end up seeing them. And it's really bad if they develop diabetes as youth, because I think the severity just, you know, it must have to do with pancreatic maturation and stuff like that. I mean, they have a much higher issue when they get older. So what, you know, what sort of prevalence, I know you don't have like statistics necessarily, but just kind of off the top of your head, anecdotally, do you see some real obesity related complications in your youth where then you say, okay, yeah, we really do need to really be more intense and start considering medication?
I'd probably say like in my patient population, so we're more in a suburban clinic and mostly, you know, not as ethnically diverse, I'll say. I see maybe like 10% of the time do they have complications. Most notably, I'll probably see, you know, some NASH or NAFLD kind of setting in, not as much diabetes, maybe more pre-diabetes coming in, more hypertension. But the more severe the obesity, the higher the prevalence of those secondary complications are. So if we do the screening labs and see that they do have signs of those things, then we really get focused in.
Boy, to me, that sounds like a pretty high amount of, yeah. I mean, that's a pretty high prevalence for kids. You know, I mean, obviously in the adult setting, I don't know, Spence,
I think that's what we're seeing now. That's what we're seeing. Like,
I know. And that's really sad, which also, by the way, so for anybody listening, this is why we have to, as a globe, as the world, do a better job with prevention,
right?
You know, improving our obesogenic environment, helping people establish these lifestyle habits before it happens. And we know, you know, genetics plays a strong role, and we're going to talk about that, mm-hmm. you know, in more detail some in a different episode, but we know lifestyle efforts can help prevent obesity and those complications. God, we got to do a better job, because it's
so how often are you pulling out the prescription pad and schlepping these drugs?
So far I've only prescribed it once, to be honest with you, but
wow. Okay, so everybody listening, I want everybody listening to
this is a real pediatrician. Yeah.
A real one, not a fake one on the internet like me.
Yep. Yeah. I don't just play one on TV. Yeah, I know.
Not even close to one like me.
So no, it is interesting. Okay. So anybody listening, you got these guidelines that make it look like these doctors are going to be schlepping. I mean, of course you're a specialist, so it's possible that, you know, general pediatricians go, okay, maybe I should be doing this. Although I honestly don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think so either. Cause honestly, I'm uncomfortable prescribing a lot of this stuff because it's new, right? And I have to get my comfort, and I have studied this, and I have the, you know, a little bit more expertise than the general pediatrician who hasn't gone through and gotten the obesity certifications and whatnot. So I don't envision the pediatrician, the general peds going to just throw it out there, you know, to everyone who asks for it. I don't think that's necessarily happening.
I agree with you.
But I see a value and a place for it when it's needed. You know, like if we've tried lifestyle interventions, or maybe we can, maybe there's some barriers to there. Maybe we have a child who has a intellectual disability or, you know, impulsiveness that we can't control, you know? And so then it's like, this is a different ballgame than just your run-of-the-mill teenager or whatnot.
Have you seen any cases where there it's like clearly it's genetic and you found like an MC4 or POMC mutation of some sort, anything like that?
Not yet.
Okay.
Because we definitely probably need to start looking for those more.
Yeah, I think I should start doing some.
And maybe it'll be interesting to know or to talk to more general pediatricians and see sort of what they, you know, who they're seeing and if they have any real little bitty kids with severe obesity right off the bat compared to what ultimately ends up making it to me. And it wasn't really caught back in the day. You know what I mean? Obviously, there are fewer of adult obesity endocrinologist type people. And so they sort of, you know, obviously it's a selection bias. So once in a, you know, I might end up seeing more where I'm like, oh, you're an 18-year-old, something's wrong. And we got to do genetic testing. So we're starting to do a lot more of it. It'll be interesting to see what you guys start seeing from a, you know, just from a statistical perspective.
Start doing more of it.
So
yeah.
You talked about the guidelines mm-hmm. having a ton of information about lifestyle, but not actually how to implement it. So how do you implement in kids? It is because you're working with parents. It's just a whole nother dynamic that makes it really difficult.
So
how do you do it?
I always joke. I say in pediatrics, we have two patients in the room. We have the child and there's always the parent that's there as well. And so depending on the age of the child, you know, first you just kind of, you know, you ask them like, do you have concerns, you know, today? May I talk to you about your child's growth chart today? You know, and if they say yes, you know, and then I say, okay. And sometimes, you know, if I want to be more sensitive, I might use vague terms in front of the younger child and just kind of assess, you know, the family's interest. Are you concerned about it? Can I tell you my concerns about it? You know, and then just kind of go from there and just kind of feel it out. But I'll be honest, sometimes you have parents who are just like, nope, it's not a problem. Don't want to hear it. Don't want to do anything. And if I have that door is closed from the very beginning, I don't know that I'm going to get very far. So for that day, I might just be like, okay, well, we'll just, you know, maybe we can talk about it again next time we see you, or you can come back in a few months and we can see what's going on. So I really try to get the parent involvement. I don't force the issue because that's just going to sever our relationship or, you know, and I don't want to do that either.
You're good with motivational, rolling with resistance, right?
Yes, exactly.
That's good. That's good. Okay. But what about when they come to you like, my kid needs to lose weight, and they come to you, they're referred to you for it. Then how do you do it?
Yeah. So we just kind of see, like, first I start with like, what is it that they're concerned about? Because sometimes there's a misperception, like maybe the parent thinks the kid should look a certain way or be a certain weight, and maybe it's not appropriate for us to have this conversation, you know? So we kind of first like establish like, what is it that they're concerned about? What have they been told if they're referred by someone else? And then if the child's old enough, kind of what are their thoughts on the issue? What are their concerns? What do they want to talk about? What are their goals? You know? And sometimes for the kids, a lot of times it's like I have one patient, he has a goal to be able to be, to run a mile by next year when he has to go to gym class, you know? And so it's like, okay, that's a wonderful goal. Let's work on that, you know? And we use that as our drive versus a number, you know, have to be achieving.
That's good.
Yeah, that's really good. Do the kids, respond to talking about, you know, it's really about their health, you know, sort of the old, I often use the phrase, it's what's on the inside that counts, literally speaking. You know, I try to talk to my kids about that, you know, and, you know, when we talk about nutrition and exercise, you know, and we come from obviously a very heavy sports background, our kids play sports and stuff like that. And so I want them to know that the exercise is not just for athletic achievement, but really for their health. Mm-hmm. Do you, as a pediatrician, think kids respond to that? And there might be a huge spectrum of how they understand.
Your kids go, shut up, daddy. You got abs and pecs, and you had abs in utero.
So do they to some degree.
So the younger kids don't quite understand that, and like long term and future and whatnot. Sometimes with teenagers, you can kind of get to them that way. But for younger kids, I more just be like, well, like, what do you do for fun? How do we move? How do we move our bodies in a fun way? You know, how many times a week can we move our bodies in a fun way? You know, things like that. You kind of talk about it in that way. And then in regards to like, let's say eating or food choices, I'm guilty of sometimes still using healthy versus unhealthy, but I'm really trying to not do that anymore. And just kind of teaching them that like, you know, all foods fit, everything is fine, but we have good, better, and best choices. And our best choices, the more we can make best choices, the better for our bodies. And I kind of joke and I say, like, pretend your body's a race car. What kind of fuel are you going to put inside that race car so to run fast? Are you going to put the junky fuel, or are you going to put in like the really high energy, high octane fuel that's going to make you go fast? And they usually like get it in that regard, that like it's still going to make your body run. But if I have a choice, I'll try to make the better choices when I can.
Yeah, I like that. I'm very careful with my word, because my kid picks up on it. It's like, are French fries healthy, Daddy? And yeah. I'm like,
my kids do.
I'm like, my I like them.
Yeah, but your kids pick up on expletives.
at least fucking French fries.
Yes. Even like diets, you know, like the word diet. I like spent time with my kids one time because I was like, do you guys even know what diet means? My kids are like between 7 and 12. And they knew exactly what diet meant in our culture. And I was just like, oh my gosh, like, how do you guys know that already? You know? And they're like, from you, Mommy. I'm like, what? From me? No way. They're like, wow. Yeah. And I was like, shoot, you know, like, okay, I got to be more careful of what I'm saying and what I'm doing.
Yeah. My kids are like sponges. And I'm like, how did they even hear that? But I'm like, I don't know. Some of the things my kids say, I'm like, they definitely heard me saying something at one point.
Yeah. And again, it's generally expletives.
It's always expletives.
And some weird stuff.
Yeah.
Don't kink shame me on this podcast.
Too late. And I got fired.
Yeah, we got,
and case, I got fired again. All right.
We got fired again.
There's like 28 episodes running where I keep getting fired.
All right. We're on a roll here. All right. I like it. So, all right. The thing is, these headlines about the guidelines were the I call it faux outrage culture. Everybody's outraged. People are, but you're hearing it from, you know, the horse's mouth right here, a pediatrician who specialized in obesity and talking about, you know, sure, they could have showed how to implement the lifestyle a little bit better. It is easier said than done. And even at these multidisciplinary centers that are supposed to be really good at it, it's still really hard and maybe not doing the amazing job. And even though they recommend drugs and surgery, that's not actually happening that often and likely will not be adopted by general pediatricians on a large scale.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I think that's...
And even for the surgical component, like when I went back and read through that section again, and the wording says that the pediatrician should offer it, not recommend it, but we should offer it in that, like, we're explaining it and offering all the options to the family for them to kind of see what fits for them the best and for their child or adolescent. And that's not going to be, and then even if a patient is referred to a bariatric surgical clinic, it doesn't mean that they're going to have surgery performed. You know, like, again, it's just like, I'm just letting you know, here's everything that you've got available to you. You get to help, you know, let me help you make the decision, but you're going to make that decision what you feel like is best for you. So it's not that we're recommending it for everybody that's over 13, you know. It's a very nuanced word, but it's important.
You know, and I'll tell you, as far as this whole, you know, implementing the, you know, the lifestyle program plus or minus medications and surgery, I'll tell you what, if my system, Holland Hospital, if anybody's listening, I really think we have to find a way to make this family focused. Mm-hmm. So like, let's say, you know, we convince you to move over to my side of the state and we set up, you know, a family based, you know, obesity, cardiometabolic health, multidisciplinary clinic. Mm-hmm. I think that would be pretty darn good. There's got to be a way to do that that's not just pragmatic for real life, but also, you know, yeah, because I know pay gets involved. I know reimbursement's a problem, but there's got to be a way to do this in a family-focused way. I really hope I can, you know, work with my pediatricians and do more family-based stuff. Because I always say, like, people often come into me as a couple, you know what I mean? The married couple or whatever. But they'll often tell me about their kids struggling. I say, look, it's really going to be helpful if you guys are a team and we do this as a team. But if we could actually make that happen in the real clinical setting, boy, that sounds...
It's the application of everything. Like, most of our patients have the knowledge. They know what's good, what's bad for their body, you know, what changes they need to make. It's the application of doing those changes and helping them overcome whatever barriers they have to make that change is where we should really be focusing our energy. And that's what I'm trying to do. And like, I work outside of the clinic online, with working moms. Like that's my like little niche in coaching and just kind of working with them one-on-one to try to figure out their barriers so that then they can maybe teach that to their kids eventually.
Well, yeah, real life, you know, different education. Yeah, that's really outstanding. Thank you so much for, you know, doing this with us.
I love it. Thank you so much for coming on and chatting about this because you have a much, I would say, better
perspective. No problem. Thank you. Thanks for highlighting it.
Very good. Here's our outro.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities. We'll be right back.